You're listening to the Cat Breeder Sensei Says podcast, the show that supports the reputable breeding of pedigree cats. I'm your show host, April Catito, and in this episode, we're going to be talking about the cat breeder contract. We will get into all of this juicy stuff right after this short message.
Do you want to learn how to become a successful breeder of pedigree cats? Now you can. For the first time ever, enroll in an online training course that takes you step by step through everything you need to know to get on the right track. Visit catbreedersensei.com to sign up today and use code podcast21 to get $25 off.
Okay, we're back. Just as a disclaimer, the information that you hear in this episode is based on my personal knowledge or my personal experience. Yours may certainly differ from mine, so please use the show for informative purposes only, and if you're unsure about anything that has to do with a contract, please consult with your attorney for legal advice. So some of my background is in real estate. I've actually been a real estate broker since 1998, and every transaction is accompanied by contract. So I know the importance of contracts, and I know what happens when contracts get broken. People get upset. I've also learned that one of the best things you can do when it comes to a contract is really spell out the details so that both parties that are involved knows exactly what to expect in every scenario and what will happen if in the event that something goes wrong. That's really the whole intent of a contract, is to agree in writing. So all the he said, she said, BS, that don't go. We're going to use the contract to solidify our transaction. Now, most cat breeders are gonna use a contract for selling pets, and they'll have a different one when selling kittens with breeding rights. There's some elements of the contract that we're going to discuss in this episode, which is going to be price, terms, and resolution. Those are going to be our three main components in our cat breeder contract. And hopefully at the end of the episode, you'll have gathered some information that will help you analyze your contract and see if it is as solid as it can be or as it should be, and maybe give you some insight on some changes that you might want to add into your contract. So let's go over price first. This part is relatively simple. We want to make sure that the purchase price of the kitten is spelled out in our contract, as well as any deposit that has been received or that is due on the kitten, and if it's being applied toward the purchase price of the kitten. Also, your deposit should indicate if it is refundable and under what circumstances, or if it is non-refundable and under what circumstances, or if you have some conditions for both of those. If you have your final payment that is due at a certain time, for example, 10 days before it goes home, or cash on delivery, or they pay you by Venmo when they pick the kitten up, whatever you expect to get paid and when you expect to get the final payment for the kitten should be detailed in your contract so that there's no misunderstanding. The terms of the agreement can be quite lengthy, so we'll go over some of the terms that you can have a look at closer in your contract. There's some simple things that you want to cover, like what age you allow your kittens to go home, and what vaccines, treatments, and procedures will be done to the kitten prior to leaving. So, for example, if you require that the kittens are 12 weeks of age before they leave the cattery, and you're going to administer two sets of FVRCP vaccines, a flea treatment, and a spay or neuter procedure, then all of that needs to be written into the contract so both parties know exactly what to expect. Buyer responsibilities can be added into the contract as well. What do you expect of your buyer? Do you want them to take the kitten into their own vet and have them examined within 48 hours or 72 hours after they arrive home? In some states, this is required to enforce the health guarantee. Do you want your buyers to keep health records for you, send you pictures on an annual basis? Are you against decloying of your kittens? And do you absolutely prohibit the outdoor roaming of your kittens? These are things, expectations from your buyer that you expect that you should include in your contract. Now we'll split this section up into two different areas. One's going to be if you're selling your kittens as pets, what do you want to include in your contract? And then if you're selling a kitten with breeding rights, that should be different terms. So usually the main difference in your pet or breeding right contract is going to be whether or not the kitten is spayed or neutered, or if you expect it to be spayed or neutered before a certain age. So some breeders spay and neuter before the kitten goes home, or what's called early spay and neuter. Some breeders are totally against that. Some of the larger breeds, like Maine Coons, they just do not feel comfortable doing early spay and neuter, even though there is some research to indicate that it is completely safe. You just can't convince people to change their mind about things that they believe in. So you'll find different contracts on this. If the pet is going to be spayed or neutered before it goes home, typically the registration papers will be included when the kitten is delivered to the new owner. These are things that will be in the contract. The other breeder will have in the contract they expect that the new owner will spay or neuter the kitten before a certain age. It can be anywhere from 6 months to 12 months old. It's totally up to the breeder when they require that. Typically, after proof of spay or neuter is sent to the breeder by the new owner, that is the time where they will deliver the registration papers for the kitten, and not until then. If you're selling a kitten with breeding rights, you'll have a little more details that you want explained and agreed to in your contract. So you're going to deliver the kitten intact to the breeder, to their cattery. Some items that you might want to address are age requirements. That would be if you're selling a female and you don't want that female to be mated sooner than 12 months old, then that should be in your contract. Also, if you're selling a male, are you going to allow the breeder to use this male for stud servicing? When it comes to selling kittens from this particular kitten that you're selling to the breeder. Additionally, if you're new and you have a relationship with a breeder who has agreed to mentor you and sell you a kitten, sometimes you'll have special arrangements with them about co-ownership, or they sell you a kitten for breeding, but they want a kitten back from one of the first litters. Those things should be in the contract as well. So just anything that is part of this business transaction and the expectations that are coming from both sides, we definitely want to have that in writing and signed. Let's talk about your health guarantee now and what you're actually promising to the buyer as far as the health of your kitten. Another topic you might want to address in your breeding contracts is fertility issues. If the cat is not willing to mate, then are you going to replace it, or do you not guarantee that the cat is even going to be interested in that? And what about fertility issues? So maybe this cat can't produce kittens at all for some reason. There's a reproductive issue, or the male just never is able to sire any kittens. He has a low sperm count. So these issues that are specific to kittens with breeding rights won't actually present themselves until they get older and are, you know, they're attempting to use them in their breeding program, and then they find out that there is an issue. This is something you definitely want to address in your agreement with the buyer. Now, don't get me wrong, there's no rule that says you have to guarantee fertility or interest in mating at all from any cat. But if you are or you're not going to, then make sure that it is in your contract with your buyer. The best way to do something is your way. So over time, you will develop what works for you and what makes you comfortable and uncomfortable until you really feel confident in what you're offering and also in your contract. Let us talk now about the health guarantee that you're offering to your buyers. I feel like most of the issues that are going to come up are going to be circled around this health guarantee. So I suggest that this is really where you pay attention to those fine little details and think things through. It's literally impossible to address every issue that might potentially come up in a cat. There's just too many things to name and identify individually. So you have to think about what you're willing to replace a kitten for. That's really what this contract, they're kind of designed to do that. It's a replacement guarantee. You're assuring the buyer that you are selling them a healthy kitten, and that if it isn't, what are you going to do to resolve the issue? So that puts us at the word healthy. What is a healthy kitten? Well, a buyer may assume that a healthy kitten means that nothing will ever happen to this kitten, that it's just the perfect specimen of a feline that has ever been born. Or you may assume that healthy means it doesn't contract any of the genetic diseases that they're known for. So you see, you're on two different pages here when it comes to the word healthy. So think about the things that you DNA test your cats for, your breeding tribe, and what things is your breed known for having issues with that are not able to be tested for genetically. And are you willing to offer any, you know, payment of vet bills or replacement of the kitten or refunds? You know, what is your policy on that as far as guaranteeing that your buyer is getting a healthy kitten? And for how long do you want to extend this guarantee? I've collected over 800 applications to this point, and I can say that about 70% of them make a mention that they're looking for a healthy kitten. So that's really what people want when they are buying a pedigree cat. They just want to know that they're getting a healthy animal and that it is expected to live out its life. I mean, I'm sure that people realize that things happen and things are going to come up that are unexpected. I mean, how can they not think that? But just to make sure that you guys are on the same wavelength, this is what the big one that needs to be highly detailed in your contract, so that the buyer, if something does come up later, whether it's 2 months after it goes home, 6 months after it goes home, 6 years, you know, whatever happens, there should be something in your contract that addresses how to handle that. And it could be there's nothing to talk about here. You know, there was a health guarantee for this amount of time. That time has passed. And, you know, we can't promise to a buyer that every kitten that leaves our cattery is going to be healthy for 15 years. It's really unrealistic for anyone to think that. So let's talk about how to address these. So, most people are going to, of course, cover genetic defects. If they have, you know, a defective heart or a defective heart valve, or an organ is, you know, not shaped properly, it's not functioning right, these could be considered genetic. And if ultimately it results in the loss of the kitten's life or the cat, depending on how old it is, that could come back to the breeder. So there's so many things that can be assumed genetic that I think issues should be spelled out, and we'll just pinpoint the things that we're willing to cover when it comes to genetics. I swear, anytime you take a cat to the vet or a buyer takes a kitten to the vet, especially if it's coming from a breeder and it's a pedigree kitty, the vets love to say, "This is genetic." Okay, well, I understand that a lot of things are genetic, but some things are anomalies. And it doesn't always mean that this was, you know, started in your cattery and that it's, you know, rolling downhill now and all the kittens are suffering from it. It could be a one-time event. You know, things happen like that. I have a friend who has, you know, her parents, these pair of cats that she mated, had perfectly fine, normal gums, bubblegum pink. And they had a litter of kittens, and one of the kittens in the litter at around 9 months old ended up with super red, flame red gums, just bad gingivitis or juvenile periodontitis, just, you know, did not have healthy gums. And can we say that was genetic? I don't know, because the parents' gums were okay. They looked fine. They were healthy pink. There was no issues there. So this may have been an anomaly. But the veterinarian or dental specialist is always going to say that it was genetic. So your contract needs to address these things, because there's so many things that can come up and you're like, I have never heard of this before. You know, how do I even address this? So what I do in my contract is I cover all of the things that I test for in my DNA test, which is about 38 different genetic diseases that the cat is known for or can carry or be carriers of. So I test for that. And if the cat is at risk, of course, I'm not going to use it in my breeding program. But a negative DNA test doesn't always mean that the cat will not develop this problem. So if you think that a DNA test, a clear or a negative DNA test makes your cat healthy, it doesn't. It just means that they do not carry the gene that puts them at, you know, more risk of developing it. But a cat that tests negative negative for HCM can absolutely get HCM at a young age and pass away from it. So that's where we want to draw the line and make sure there's a clear explanation of how the contract works. So I do the DNA testing. Those are the genetic defects that I will cover in the event that the cat dies from it. And I do a 5-year health guarantee. So mine is a little longer than most people. I have confidence in the health of my cats. If I don't, then I do not use them in my breeding program. So I'm offering a 5-year health guarantee against the genetic defects that I've tested for through DNA. And that's what I'm using to assure myself that they're not at higher risk for these problems. But I also know that it could come up. So if it does come up in the first 5 years and it results in the kitten passing away, then I will replace that cat. I will gladly and happily, no questions asked. Well, you do have to provide me with a necropsy report and show that it was caused by something genetic that is on my list. And everything that I cover is on my contract. So there's no question about what genetic issue is covered. So you can't just say, oh, and by the way, this was genetic, so, you know, I need a replacement. No, we're going to look at the contract and see, is it one of the items that are listed here and that we agreed to when you got the kitten? There's other things that come up that aren't genetic or that can not really be pinpointed as being genetic, like FIP. Some people will, you know, say it's absolutely genetic. Some will say it's environmental. Some will say it's based on the parents and the pairing and how their genes interact with each other. So there's not really a test that can pre-screen any cat for FIP, but you can cover FIP in your contract if you want to. You can also exclude FIP if you want to. The best way to do things are your way, but they all need to be explained in your contract. Now, some states have a lemon law, and in the Cat Breeder Sensei breeding course, the complete guide to breeding pedigree cats, I do suggest that everyone has a lemon law clause in their contract. It really protects everybody, and it tells what the buyer can do if something happens to the cat and things that they need to do in the beginning to make sure that the cat is healthy and that, you know, if they accept the cat the way it is for the first 2 days or 5 days, that they're agreeing that they, you know, they're happy with the cat and they had it checked by the vet. And if the vet finds something genetic, then you'll replace the cat. There's just all these details are spelled out. And I love that, because the more that we can cover, the better off everybody will be, the less confusion that we'll have. So go back tonight and read your health guarantee and see what it says and see how you feel about it. You know, when you're buying a cat, either for breeding or for a pet, or, you know, how would you feel if you were reading your contract and these were the terms? You know, now that you are a breeder, think about both sides of the transaction and make it fair for everybody. I mean, you don't want the contract to be weighted in favor of one person. It really should be a good balance, and everyone should be happy, and everybody should be covered, you know, protect themselves, both people, not just one person, but both people, I believe, should be protected in a contract. It shouldn't be in favor of one or the other. So just look at your contract and make sure it's fair, and always encourage your buyers, because they don't read things before they sign it. And that's where people get in trouble, is they're so excited about getting a kitten that you put the contract in front of them and they just sign it. You know, I mean, that happens with everything. Buying a car, buying a house, buying a cat. They don't read the terms. Encourage them to read the contract and make sure that they're okay with what we're agreeing to right now. Because, you know, you can reiterate that, you know, something happens, we're gonna revert back to this contract. You know, everything that I expect of you and that I think you expect of me is in this agreement. So make sure you read it before you pay a deposit or before we proceed. So I actually reiterate that a lot of times before I actually collect a deposit and get the contract. What happens if something goes wrong? What does the contract say? What does your contract have as a resolution? Is it you guys are going to fight on Facebook and bash each other? That's what we see so often, is breeders bad talking buyers and buyers bad talking breeders. And it's really sad. And I always think, it didn't have to be this way. Like, someone could have just made a better contract and been more transparent and thought this out a little bit further, and I could see a resolution here. If the cat gets sick once it goes home and it's not genetic, you know, that's where the hairiness comes in. You know, what kind of sick is it? And what happened to the kitten once it left the cattery? And how soon after it left the cattery did it get sick? Is it stressed out? What's the environment like in the cat's new house? Did you take it to the vet? Is it on antibiotics? We can't ever assume that we know what's going on once the kitten leaves. We kind of always picture people handling and treating the cats like we do, with great care and skill and diligence. But, you know, what happens when they leave? That's where I think the argument really comes in, is that something happens to the kitten and there's conflict, because everybody's pointing fingers and, well, the kitten's fine when it left here. And the buyer's like, well, you know, you're the breeder and you're a terrible breeder and you sell sick cats and I'm going to go post it on Facebook and all these groups. That's kind of how conflicts go normally. I have not had a conflict with any of my buyers, knock on wood, not yet. I don't want any. So that's why I really have a long contract and it's detailed and I encourage them to read it. So resolution is what's going to happen if one of us break this contract. What is the ultimate answer here? Is it money? Is it a cat? Is it, you know, what do you want to happen? If I want my buyer to not declaw a kitten, but then I find out later that it did declaw the cat, maybe when the cat was 3, what is the remedy for that? If it was in my contract, you know, there should be a resolution that's in the contract. Like, and if you do this, then I expect this to happen. When you go to court, and ultimately that's how you enforce a contract, you can't do it by verbally bullying people online or making threats. The only way a contract will get resolved without the use of a court process is through communication and people being mature and acting like adults and handling the situation. That's really the best way to handle any issue that comes up with any person ever, is just to communicate and try to talk things out. You know, sometimes there's personality conflicts, I get that, but at least try to be an adult, be mature, and handle the situation. Don't be defensive and attacking people, that's not going to work. The other resolution is you end up in court, but what do you want ultimately out of it? That's where enforcement comes in. But let's talk about the resolution for a minute. Let's talk about the more of the simpler topic. If the kitten doesn't get picked up when it's time for him to go home, I had an example where I had a litter of kittens and it was time for them to go home and I was scheduling pickup dates and someone said, oh, I'm not going to be able to pick them up at that time. I'm actually going out of town and, you know, there was all these things going on. And he wanted me or she wanted me to keep the kitten for an extra 3 weeks. And this kind of came as a surprise to me because, you know, I've been talking about go home dates for 10 weeks. And then all of a sudden this came up. And that's when I said, oh, well, this is not addressed in my contract and it may certainly come up again. So I went and modified my contract at that time to say, if we choose a pickup date, this is the time he can go home. If he's not picked up by this date, then there is a $35 per fee boarding fee for me to take care of the kitten. And I will only do that for this amount of time. And then I will assume you're not coming to get him. So, I mean, I went, you know, started out as a feather, ended up as a brick, but I had to address all those things. It didn't end up like that, but, you know, it certainly could have. I mean, we just never know what people are going to do. So I would always like to have scenarios like that spelled out in my contract. I might be a little bit too much with the contract, but I would like to cover things like that so that we don't have to, quote unquote, argue about it later. I just don't want to do that. I'd rather it be cut and dry, clear, and we can refer to the contract when that issue arises. So that's one of the more simple things that, you know, I could use as an example. Other things is really going to be the health issues. That's what you want to tackle on your contract and make sure it's super duper duper clear, 100% clear. What's covered, what's not covered, for how long it's covered, and what will happen if this issue that's covered comes up. And if we're excluding any of these issues, make sure they are in the contract as well. Hopefully everybody can understand how contracts work. So when it comes to enforcement, that is when things get ugly, is when people are trying to enforce the contract, whether it's the breeder trying to enforce or the buyer trying to enforce. I've seen online mostly both people are, that's kind of equal that, you know, they threaten to take each other to court and sue each other. And, you know, to be honest, I've only seen one actual case go to court over cats and over the contract, and the breeder won. The buyer, which was also a breeder, she didn't win. So who wants to go to court and argue about this? I don't know. I know I don't. I mean, I guess I would if I had to, but I don't want to. I would rather just be able to solve any issues in the contract initially or, you know, just by communicating and being civil and, you know, being a problem solver. That's really what you have to be. So if someone is willing to spend the money to take these issues to court, then they'll take them to court. And what will prevail in a court of law is what's going to be what's in writing. So that's why it's important to identify situations and little details and little nuances that you want to make sure you're covered for and you want to protect yourself from in the event you end up in court. You never know. I mean, we're in a court sue happy world. Everybody wants to, I'm just going to take you to court. Okay. The realism is it costs money to get in front of a judge. It costs money. I mean, probably, I don't know, I'm guessing $2,000, $3,000 to hire an attorney, you know, to review the contract and see if there's even anything worth going to court, you know, a civil case and going in front of a judge and getting heard, your case heard, and then hopefully you win the case if you're the plaintiff. I mean, you know, you gotta spend money to do that. So I'm back again to civility and communication and, you know, trying to resolve contract issues without taking it to that level. I think when somebody says, F it, I'm going to take this to court, that's just, they're at the end of their rope. And maybe they've tried to reach out and, you know, make something happen and they got met with resistance. And so now they're just over it and they want to take it to court. I don't think many people do. Not on contracts like this because it's expensive. And does the reward outweigh the cost of what it's going to take to get? Sometimes it's just the principle of the matter, and that's what people fight for. And I think most of the time that's probably what you're going to see if a contract on a kitten ends up in front of court, it's a principle. It's people who really are adamant on the principle of the matter. I feel like I'm rambling a bit much about this, but I just have seen so much in the real estate arena with contracts and disputes and arbitration and mediation that I think it's interesting how we use contracts to sell kittens and how, you know, the terms of the agreement are all spelled out. So it's very interesting to me and how far people will go to enforce it, whether it's not far at all or they'll take it all the way to court. People get real passionate about their cats, you know, on both sides. So I hope that this episode offered some enlightenment about your contract and maybe some things you can add into it and modify it to make it a little stronger and a little more balanced and make sure that you're protected and that your buyer's protected and that you're being fair and that what you're offering to the public is something that you can stand behind. And when it comes time to refer to your contract, you feel comfortable with that and you're happy with the terms and the agreement that you made with your buyer in the very beginning. That's really what we want. We want everybody to be happy with the kitten, even if something comes up. We can all work together and make a resolution without having to fight about it. We can be professional. So I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Cat Breeder Sensei Says. Do us a favor and leave us a review on the podcast platform that you listen to us on. If you haven't subscribed to the podcast already, be sure to do that so you don't miss the next episode of Cat Breeder Sensei Says. And finally, if you have a topic that you would like to hear about on Cat Breeder Sensei Says, just send us an email to info@catbreedersensei.com and let me know. I also want to start doing some highlight spots for specific breeds. So if you are a breeder of a pedigree cat and you feel comfortable doing a podcast with me for 25 or 30 minutes to talk about your breed and how cool it is and the characteristics and educate people about your specific breed, then you can also send me an email for that at info@catbreedersensei.com. I would love to hear from you and have you as a guest on the show. Until next time, my kitties, you guys make good choices, and I will see you next time. Bye.